got no mind. Ain't got no mother. Ain't got no culture. Ain't got no friends. Ain't got no schooling. Ain't got no love. Ain't got no name. Ain't got no ticket. Ain't got no token. Ain't got no God. And what have I got? Why am I alive anyway? Yeah, what have I got? Nobody can take away. Got my hair, got my head, got my brains, got my ears. My eyes, got my nose, got my mouth, I got my smile. I got my tongue, got my chin, got my neck, got my boots, got my heart, got my soul, got my back, I got my sick. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver.
And that, of course, was I Got Life from Hair, 1969 musical. And we're going to be doing more from a collection put together by Skidmark Bob called Homeless Songs for Huff. Huff, of course, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group I work with and encourage you to work with. It meets every Wednesday, 9:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific Avenue. We go from 9:30 to 11:30, and we're also responsible for showing up downtown and reminding the downtown merchants, downtown association, tourists, residents, and anybody else who happens to walk through that Santa Cruz is a city that criminalizes its homeless people at night. In spite of the fact that we're paying Doug LaSalle here, who is our in-studio guest, I don't know what, $70,000 a year, something like that, to, oversee homeless services out at the Homeless Service Center. The shelter services are lamentably limited. And, in fact, let me introduce Doug, and we can get into that in a moment. But we'll be doing a protest on Saturday. We invite you to join us. It's been going on for the last 7 weeks. Now it's coming up on the 8th week. We're in front of Bunny Shoes downtown. Bunny Shoes is a sort of a strange place to be. It's sort of an upscale shoery. And next to the Hat Company, next to the Palomar Hotel down on Pacific Avenue. It's not that we have anything against Bunny Shoes or that they have discriminatory policies in their store toward the homeless. If you've got $100, you can buy shoes no matter what you look like, I imagine. Unlike places like Lulu Carpenter's, where we hear owner Mantri Srinath regularly instructs his workers to turn away people who look homeless. That's the inside dope from a worker, actually, last week who came by our table in front of Bunny's and actually gave us that interview, which I'm going to be playing today as well later after Doug and I get tired of chatting with each other. And, Doug, you're invited to stay. Let me introduce you now. Let me first say that again. This protest will be happening not at 1 o'clock as it usually does, but at 2 o'clock on Saturday. And it's we aren't going to be serving food, but you will get some nice coffee. You will get some opportunities to observe the police observing you. Police tried to drive us away last time. We actually responded by, kind of doing a PR job so we can show the community the good work the police department is doing. And you can actually go to indiebay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media. That's a website. And you can see the police in action trying to remove a political table downtown. We actually left after about 3 hours. We'd had enough of, actually intended only to be there for 2 hours, and we'll be talking more about that. Anyway, let me introduce Doug LaSalle. Also, I have another in-studio guest, Coral Brun, who is, I'm not sure if she's going to be the Grand Inquisitor or the occasional questioner or what, but she's here in the studio as well. Coral has a show every Thursday. In fact, you probably heard her show earlier, 3 o'clock. That was at 3, wasn't it, Coral?
Yes.
And if you want to talk, you should talk into the mic. Otherwise, we can't hear you. Don't be petulant. So, Doug, when you talk, be about an inch from the mic. That's kind of the rule here. You really have to be very close to it. So you're a little a little further away.
Let me adjust.
Yes, adjust that mic.
Hold on. I'm going to pull down your headphones.
And he's going to check out. He's going to have some. You're welcome to wear them, too. You can actually hear your own voice. But
I'm okay with not hearing my own voice.
Oh, well, we'll all get to hear your voice. So yeah. It's okay. So if during the course of this discussion, listeners, you want to call in, we do have a call-in number. And indeed, that is the point of this radio show. It's not just me and Doug talking. We did that a week ago. It's not just me and Coral talking. We do that almost every other Huff meeting, which we happen to get to. But it's you, me, and the rest of us all talking. Doug here is unusual in that he is actually opening himself up to questions from the community, unlike the prior head of the Homeless Service Center, Ken Cole, who, at least as I recall, refused to come on the air, never opened himself up to questions, and was really hard to contact. Doug has given out his cell phone number to Huff members. He's actually...
I don't know if that was a mistake or not.
Well, you'll find out when your phone bill comes in.
Yeah. Robert's going to announce it over the air.
Well,
just give it time.
Plus his special L.A. number with his wife and family. We can get into that one, too. But, you know, I think you are much more accessible. Not that I agree with some recent policy suggestions you've made, but nonetheless, you know, I think that may indicate your prior expertise, profession, preference. You are you have a background in psychology, no?
That's correct.
So I mean that
PhD in clinical psychology.
We'll try to forgive you for that one, and
it's from being insecure. So, you know, you've got to stay in school a long time, and you've got to get a lot of degrees if you're insecure about your intellect and other things. So,
well, I know that Ken Cole came from Seattle, where he was a homeless advocate or a service provider up there. Is this your first sort of homeless services center-ish type job? Or?
Actually, no. I was the executive director of Salvation Army Bell Shelter, which is a shelter located in the city of Bell. We had anywhere between 300 and 380 residents at any given time. We had 128 licensed drug and alcohol beds. We had 152 shelter beds. We had 59 transitional beds. And it was on 29 acres in the city of Bell.
Where is the city
of Bell? I was there for about 4 years. Yeah. City of Bell is, there's hub cities. The hub cities are City of Commerce.
Is it California we're talking about?
Yeah. City of Bell.
What's the general location?
Yeah, it's at this kind of strange intersection between the 710 and the 5. So you have City of Commerce, you have City of Bell, you have City of Bell Gardens, Cudahy. And so they call it the hub cities because, you know, they all kind of come together in that one area. It's in East Los Angeles.
There we go.
That's
what I wanted to know. So largely English-speaking, Spanish-speaking, largely African-American. What was the racial mix? The
racial mix was split fairly evenly between English-speaking, white, African-American, and Latino clients. So we had about 30% of each.
What kind of services did you provide there?
We had a licensed drug and alcohol program, so we were providing services for people who were addicted to substances. We had 152 shelter beds for clients who basically were homeless, who were trying to get back on their feet, trying to get out and be more independent. We had a transitional program that was 2 years that clients could rent trailers, and then we also ran a winter shelter program similar to the winter shelter program that you have here. But we extended all year round, and so
this, of course, is in Los Angeles, where you have millions of people living generally.
13 million in the county.
Wow. I know that Los Angeles was also the area where the Jones decision came down in 2006, which made it legal for homeless people to, in theory, sleep on the streets at night. And now, of course, throughout the entire city, that was in Skid Row, and now it's throughout the whole city, provided they're 10 feet from a business, and provided they haven't built this alleged, this proposed supportive housing, which, of course, hasn't been built, as far as I know. But it meant that what we've been trying to do in Santa Cruz, what you've often, well, those of you who are listening have often heard me talk about, is the sleeping ban, the criminalization of poor people at night.
Right.
It's, of course, not unique at all to Santa Cruz. It's, you know, it's standard to a lot of cities, but no longer to Los Angeles, San Diego, Fresno, Richmond. And it's being challenged in Santa Monica and Santa Barbara. And I'm going to ask you about the sleeping ban and what you think about that. Actually, to his credit, Ken Cole actually was part of the Homeless Issues Task Force 10 years ago that not only opposed the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, which say no sleeping after 11 o'clock at night outside in a vehicle and on much private property, but he also opposed the entire camping ordinance, which banned putting up protective tents, engaging in survival cooking, which, you know, people have to do if they have no other options. And for many people, they don't have other options, though. Homeless Service Center and your earlier Salvation Army, I guess, was a... I guess I don't regard these agencies as serious attempts to truly address the problem. I regard them as sort of... In Santa Cruz, I regard the Homeless Services Center as an attempt to get the homeless out of the downtown area, provide something for some groups of homeless people, but not in any way addressing the majority of the basic need, which is shelter.
Right.
What would you say about that?
I would agree. I'm not sure about the pulling people from the downtown area into the Harvey West area. I don't think that happens. Because this is nothing that, you know, is based in any type of
study or survey
or anything. But my observation is that the clients that we serve at Homeless Services Center generally aren't the persons that appear to be homeless in the downtown area. And so I don't believe that homeless services, there may be a perception in the community, and it may actually relieve the community of some of their anxiety, because there may be this perception that, well, if we have a homeless services center, the clients are moving up into the Harvey West area, on Coral Street, rather than being downtown. I don't think that that's accurate.
Well, the reason I propose that, Ken, I mean, Ken, sorry,
that's okay.
Slip of the tongue.
My board does.
You really don't look like Ken to me, but Doug, the reason I propose that is that the reason that the Homeless Service Center grew out of the Homeless Community Resource Center
right.
in 1998, which grew out of a free meal before that, which grew out of Calamity's Cupboard the year before that, which grew out of the protests that many of us, myself included, went to jail for serving free food at the town clock. We were actually protesting police violence and the sleeping ban. In order to do so, we served free meals at the town clock, and then Mayor Marty Wormhout and other council members and city and county agencies came after us, not because our food was unhelpful, but because they didn't like people clustering in the downtown area. The same reason that Pastor Adams' meal, was driven away from the town clock out to your homeless service center about 2 months ago, I guess. So I say this not because I have, you know, I think there are some people who don't use the Homeless Service Center who are more seen downtown on the streets, for sure. Often these are more transitory folks. They come and they go. Or they're part of a youth culture that is, you know, sleeps on the levee, a little more rough, a little younger. But I don't... one of the reasons that they say they don't use the Homeless Service Center is because for the people who work, they can't really effectively use the shelter services and work, they feel. And let's address that issue, too. And also, you close during the day. You have to be, you know, you get to go there for breakfast, and now it's going to cost 50 cents, I understand, for a meal. And then you have to pay 50 cents to be there during the day and take a shower. Is that right? Somebody mentioned that. That's apocryphal.
No, it's not apocryphal, nor is it accurate.
Oh, okay. Well, before we go any further, what are the new fees that homeless people should, you know, go to the bank to get some loans on or to pay up for these fine meals you provide twice a day?
You know, there was a lot of information. We're actually revisiting the issue of people being on the campus during the day. So that's something that we're...
Campus. This is some sort of college education system you're running on the side here. I love this terminology. I first heard it about 5 years ago. What campus? We're talking about the Homeless Service Center, right?
Correct.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a loose... interpretation of
yeah,
the
yeah, word. It's okay. A little euphemistic in my view and a little presumptuous. And you know, I mean, it brings to mind vistas of UCSC and Cabrillo and beautiful services, green lawns, not of people who are excluded during the day, who have no shelter at night, and who are now charged 50 cents a meal. But tell me more about that charge. What's going on with it?
Well, basically, because of our financial condition, we have, you know, we've got to do two things to continue providing services. One is we have to decrease expenses. And essentially, I think we've decreased expenses as much as we possibly can, unfortunately, including laying off employees. And then we have to increase income, and that's one way that we can increase income is to ask the clients to pay 50 cents per meal.
Well, I know that you and I talked about this, and you were sort of, you know, showing me the figures, saying, well, you know, if you, we have, I don't know, 300 meals a day, and you have, or 600 meals a day, I'm not sure how many meals. How many meals a day do you have?
Probably anywhere between 300 and 600.
300 and 600. Of course, it's true also, but the number of meals you have per day also determines to some extent the amount of federal money you get, right? I mean, isn't there some formula there, too?
No, there's no formula there.
Or the number of beds you allow, don't you, isn't there some correlation between...
No.
The number of people you serve and the amount of funding you get?
Sure. Those are two separate questions.
I'm sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
The food service is not connected to any federal funding.
Okay.
We do receive some municipal funding from the city of Santa Cruz, but we don't receive any federal funding for the food program. We do receive state money for the Reveille Family Shelter because we have children there, and we have a state we're funded through the state food program for the children in that program, okay? For the clients that come in for day services, we don't receive any, there's no federal funding tied in with the number of meals that we serve. We don't receive any money for that. That's all private contribution.
And for shelter?
And for shelter, we do receive $200,000 a year in FESG funding. But it's not tied in necessarily, I mean, technically it is tied into the number of beds we have filled, but more it's tied into the number of the percentage that graduate from the program and move into more permanent housing. So, for example, in the Reveille Family Shelter, about 85% of the families move into some sort of more stable housing. And again, you know, that's a loose definition as well. So the answer to that is actually yes and no. I'm not trying to obfuscate.
No, I don't think you are. I think you're trying to explain a complicated issue. But again, let's go back to this. You know, it sort of smacks of the Schwarzenegger approach of, or the Obama-Bush policy of balancing the budget on the backs of poor people, while at the same time claiming to be, you know, a great spokesman for the, you know, for the poor, or you know, concerned about the rights of everybody.
I wouldn't see myself as a great spokesman for the
me
poor.
Me neither, actually.
Or what was the second part you said?
I'm floundering around because I don't think either Schwarzenegger or Bush or even Obama are in that category. But I mean I think you actually
let me interrupt. It sounds bad. Right?
It does.
And you know, there's been some negative feelings expressed about the policy.
It's supposed to start August 1st.
August 1st, and that, you know, the clients are somewhat unhappy. I wouldn't say that that's all the clients, but I've invited clients to my office. I've suggested that I'll go over the budget with them. In fact, I invited you to my office, and I said I would go over the budget.
Right, and I told you to bring it along today. I think you brought it along today.
Well, it's a little marked up.
Yeah,
so,
well.
So it sounds bad.
Does any other homeless service center that serves food do this?
I don't believe so.
I know the Berkeley did this with a free meal. It called it the quarter meal, but it wasn't a homeless service center. It was just a Berkeley meal. Originally called the free meal in the 60s and 70s, then it became the quarter meal.
Well, maybe now call ours the 50 cent.
Yours
meal.
Is the half dollar meal. Of course, we don't have half dollars anymore. You know.
So. Right. So it sounds bad. You know, when you lay out policies like this, or you lay out programs. First of all, some people think have in their head that, you know, no organization can ever change their mind, right? So we roll this out, we find out that it's really creating a significant burden on people, so we stop. I mean, it's not as if things... I wouldn't consider this a permanent situation. As soon as we're able to afford it, we'll go back to free meals. And even if we can't, if this becomes a situation where a lot of people are precluded from eating, we'll change the policy. But this is an effort to basically increase our income, to charge people a very small amount of money for a very good meal.
Give us an example of your typical breakfast and dinner meals. What are we talking about?
Well, we get a significant amount of donation from Trader Joe's, and we get a significant amount of donation from Second Food Harvest.
We're talking about expired food
city.
Or one-day-old food?
No, we're talking about food that's not been expired, but they're pulling off their shelves, because they'll pull off food from their shelves a week before it expires.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so this is not expired food. This is not Second Harvest Food Bank, by the way.
Uh-huh. Very good.
This is fresh food. It's good food. You're welcome to come down and sample.
I've eaten a couple years ago, and I don't recall that it was. Actually, I don't usually eat there because I'm just doing something else at the time when I'm there. You know, either trying to sign people up with sleeping band tickets or something like that. But
yeah, I think that the food is high quality. The food is fresh. We have an excellent cook. We have an excellent cook. Well, she's a little kooky too.
A kooky Teresita.
And Teresa. And
what's a typical meal like? What was the meal like tonight? Were you there?
I actually ate in the family shelter, which is a different meal.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight we had spaghetti, and I think it was probably the same spaghetti that was served in both places. It had spaghetti. We had meat sauce. We had an excellent salad. It was a walnut salad with vinaigrette. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What about breakfast? What's for breakfast?
Breakfast, pancakes, oatmeal, cold cereal, eggs. This morning they had eggs and beans and tostadas, orange juice, milk.
Now, what time does the breakfast actually happen?
8 o'clock.
Until 9?
Yeah, I think until 9.
And are there requirements? Do you have to show ID? Do you just line up in line?
Just line up in line.
To show your money on August 1st, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whip out your change purse.
Well, somebody said I should walk around on the campus with one of those old change makers,
mm-hmm.
the one in the cylinders.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
You could be the conductor, conducting people into the into the meal.
Right.
So do you intend to turn people away who don't have money?
No.
Well, why should people pay you? What's going to be the incentive?
Well, we'd like them to do volunteer service if they're unable to pay. If they're unable to pay, do volunteer service, then we would set up some sort of scholarship program.
And so how is this going to work? Let's say I come in, I don't have the money. What do I do? Do I have to fill out paperwork?
Probably put your name down and then eat your meal. And then after your meal, do, say, 45 minutes of community service and
50 cents for 45 minutes. That's not bad. You know, that's actually, I understand how you're saving money out there. You fire half the staff, and now you got, wow, that's, 75 cents an hour. I think it's a traditional, but that sounds more like 1802 rather than 2000.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Sure.
About how much do you hope to procure from this, and what will you do with the money?
Well, we are looking at about $48,000 annually in this program.
From 50 cents?
$48,000 annually,
yeah.
Because we're serving we're serving anywhere between 9 and 11,000 meals a month. So we're looking at about $48,000, and that money will go into a general operating fund, which will pay for a range of things.
What percentage of your money goes to salaries?
Any social services program is labor intensive, and mm-hmm. so usually I would say probably 60-70% goes to salaries. And we have a tremendous amount of volunteers on the campus. We have a VISTA volunteer who his position is he's what's called a volunteer coordinator, and his position is to solicit and retain volunteers from the community. And so most of the people who serve our meals in the family center, many of the people who work in our kitchen, many people who are on the lot are volunteers. We also graduated, we had 52 people last year complete community service at HSC. And so persons who were in need of, they've had some sort of infraction. So I'm happy with that. It feels like we're doing something positive.
I know one of the criticisms that independent homeless advocates and activists often have of social service programs is that most of the money gets scooped up by middle class people who are looking for a job, as they have a right to do. But the lion's share doesn't get to poor people in terms of basic things like shelter and food, but it gets siphoned off into other stuff like case management or I guess salaries, offices, buildings, surveys, consultants that aren't even available to homeless people most of the time. Now, is it true? Did I understand you correctly a week ago when you told me that there is zero walk-in shelter at this time? That is to say, if you want to walk in off the street at 4 o'clock, as our police department will tell you to do, and as the hosts will tell you to do, and as the city council will assure you, and Mike Rotkin, perhaps, when he's not thinking, which is much of the time on this issue, will tell you to do, is just go down there and line up, and, there's a shelter bed. There's no excuse for sleeping outside. But when we spoke on Monday of last week, you said, no, you got to be on a waiting list. Is that still the case?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're full. We don't have any. And you at Paige Smith and the Family Shelter, there's an interview process for the. There's no interview process really to speak of for the Paul Lee Loft, but again, we're full, like I told you last week.
For those who don't know, we're talking about a variety of programs. We're talking with Doug Lassell, who's the executive director of the Homeless Services Center. He's getting tanked up on coffee here and still very relaxed. I'm impressed with his demeanor here. He hasn't been intimidated by my sharp and piercing questions. I want to say he's even sort of relaxing completely, taking his shoes off, really enjoying himself. I'm glad to see that. But the Homeless Service Center includes such things as the Homeless Persons Health Project.
Yeah.
But the shelter services include the Reveille Family Shelter, which is only for families, 29 families?
28 units, yeah.
28 units. It's for, which include two or three people per family, maybe? Or
yeah, yeah. We probably have enough room for over 100, but, the configurations, we usually run about, 60 to 70 people.
Okay, you also have the River Street, what I call the River Street Mini Shelter, which is a 30-day program of about, 30 beds or something like that?
Yeah, that's actually not underneath Homeless Services
But it's
Center.
In the same area, generally. I mean, it is a shelter program.
Yeah, it's actually our campus kind of surrounds it on three sides.
Campus, I love that.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good.
The center.
The
what should we call it?
Warehousing ground and whatever. I really have this very ambivalent attitude towards Homeless Services Center because, people will say, what has Huff done? What have homeless activists done? And I think I credit homeless activists with creating that place because we created essentially so much consternation downtown and so much exposure downtown that they decided they didn't want to have a meal at the town clock. They wanted to have the meal put into the river at River and Highway 1. Where it wouldn't be seen. Similarly with, with Adams. So I think it is, we disagree on this perhaps, and I don't know what the documentation is now, but so, again, getting back to the issue, you have, Paige Smith has about, 50 beds?
Paige Smith has 40.
And that's a transitional program. You got to pay a 30-year income to get in. It's not really a shelter program.
No, it's transitional. It's not right. An emergency shelter.
And similarly with, well, River Street isn't an emergency either, and this is a building that is not a part of officially of the Homeless Service Center,
correct.
But it's there in the same building. It's a, it's a program you can get into. What if you have half of it's mental diagnoses, half of it's drug and alcohol abuse?
I think they have DMH beds. I don't know if they have drug and alcohol beds there.
They used to, years ago. Maybe
I know they have DMH beds.
And then you have the Paul Lee Loft, which is a new addition to the shelter where people can actually for once not have to stand in line for a bus, wait, take a bus up to the armory, which is now closed, or to a church, but you can actually go in there. But unfortunately, there is apparently no there for anybody who arrives who's new, right?
No, they would be put on a waiting list, and then when something opens up, we post the openings, and then, some people don't show up, some people show up, but the beds are always filled.
Now, how many people would you say are on the waiting list now?
I wouldn't know. When I ask my managers, what kind of waiting lists that we have. They're always significant, 20, 30 people.
This sounds like 1988. We actually had the same situation. People were waiting in the rain. I guess the difference is they're probably still waiting in the rain when it starts to rain, because you're not supposed to be, you can't hide under the eaves of the, you can't shelter yourselves under the eaves, because that's illegal to be there unless you're in the program, right?
Well, it's not illegal.
Let's put it this way. Would you be calling the law on those people if they didn't leave? Illegal.
It's a policy issue.
Right. Well, the reason I say that is you may be familiar with Robert Steffen, the Pink Man.
No,
yeah,
I don't
know who
that is. Coral is familiar with him, and maybe some of our listeners. He's actually a little before your time.
Okay.
He's a guy who used to walk down with an umbrella very, very slowly down Pacific Avenue for a couple of years. He was quite a character. With rouge, he was all dressed up. And he's still around, although he's not as dramatically dressed. But 10 years ago, he was doing something else. He'd lost his vehicle, and he tried to get services at the Homeless Service Center under Ken Cole and to get a place to sleep. They didn't provide it for him at that time, so he would sleep on the porch. They had him arrested for trespass 3 times, although all he did was sleep there. And the 4th time, I think they got a stay-away order or something. So it's a continuing situation. I remember being arrested in the winter of 1988-89 when we slept in at the... it was part of the River Street shelter that they were... We called it the Annex. They wouldn't open it up, because they claimed they had to make repairs. It would take 6 months. After we slept in it, they opened it up in 2 weeks. So often...
Well, I'm sorry, where was this at?
This is around where the River Street shelter is.
Oh,
now.
I see.
It's the Annex. It's half of the River Street shelter. Half of it was open, half of it was closed.
Okay.
They were dilly-dallying, and so we told them to stop dilly-dallying and open it up. And so, in a way, you know, we've been colluders in this process of, some would say, opening up shelter. I would say, in a way, opening up token shelter for people, which doesn't really address the broad issue, because any time the city council wanted to, it could open up campgrounds and car parks that would actually accommodate a majority of the people who are homeless in Santa Cruz coming through.
Yeah, I probably disagree with the word token. Maybe token in, if you
That's
look at...
That's not quite right. I agree with you. It's more than token, but it certainly is less than meeting, you know, than a serious attempt to meet the need. I couldn't call it that.
Well, it's not token to the guy who's at, or the woman who's at Page Smith, sleeping in a bed for 18 months before they are able to move on and do whatever it is they're going to do. It's not token for that person.
For sure. But on the other hand, the amount of money that goes into all these programs could be used to provide emergency shelter for people, for everybody, or a much larger percentage of the population, rather than essentially creaming, where you're putting in, you know, the folks who are more likely to succeed in the programs, people who meet the qualifications, instead of people who simply have the need for shelter. I mean, it's based on the theory that homelessness is somehow has nothing to do with housing. It's all about defects in the individuals who are drug addicted, mental health problems, behavioral problems, and so forth.
Yeah.
That's my view.
I understand what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree. I think that, you know, I think... It's always about money. You know that, right? It's about money.
Well, it's about political will, too. I mean, the money is very there.
So if you gave me, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $2 million, and you know, some capital money, you put together the money, you buy some property, deal with all the NIMBY issues, and then you build this place where people can stay.
Yeah, well, it sounds good. But, if, for example, we had on the air 3 weeks ago Mike Rhodes from Fresno. Rhodes is an activist there. He's pointed out that there's $3 million of unspent money in Fresno for the homeless. They don't want to spend it. The mayor doesn't want to spend it. And you have a similar, I mean, you have a similar situation of the county of Santa Cruz, because it doesn't have, until recently, a manageable low-income housing element, getting far less state funding than it would. They're turning away the money because of bigotry, because they do not want to have poor and low-income people in the area. That's my analysis. What's your thoughts on that?
That's not been my experience with the county.
Really?
My experience with the county is they want to raise the housing stock. They are concerned about providing more services, and it's in direct relation to the amount of money that they receive from HUD. And so my experience with the county is that they are interested in serving the homeless, and in addition to that, they want to improve the housing stock in order to receive more HUD funding.
You know, I'm not an expert on this, but my understanding, based upon conversations with regular attenders to the what used to be called the continuum of care and what's called the 10-year plan to babble about homelessness for another 10 years or to end homelessness, which has nothing to do with ending homelessness. It has to do with providing jobs for certain consultants and folks like that and do more surveys and studies and so forth, is that, in fact, for 20 years, the county has been out of compliance with the housing element.
I'm not aware of that.
I'm not an expert on that, but that is my understanding. Recently, they changed this, but they're having trouble. I think in the last couple of months, there was a change in this because of the desperation with the budget. They needed the money.
Right.
But, of course, that doesn't mean they're any more eager to have poor and low-income people around. I mean, I think they like to present the image that they are because who wants to be regarded as a bigot these days? Although, for some NIMBYs, I guess it's considered to be more of a behavioral issue. It's not bigotry. It's these people who are homeless are, you know, they're behaviorally bad. That's why they're homeless, you see. Yeah. We're talking with Doug LaSell, who's the Homeless Services Center Director. I'm talking actually to myself. Doug, I'm going to start asking some questions
sure.
here. In fact, Coral is the main interrogator. Coral, you have any questions of this man so I can actually be... Shut me up, man.
After my break.
You got to pause for a minute to let me talk.
Please.
But you have to ask me a question.
Well, do you have any reaction to anything you've heard here today?
You're putting out a lot of information.
For sure.
And I think it's really fascinating, frankly. Like I've told you in our private conversations, you know, I'm not an activist and I'm not a politician. My primary responsibility and my primary focus is to provide housing and services for homeless folks, right?
Some homeless folks.
See, that is correct. Some homeless folks. Homeless Services Center does a good job feeding the chronic homeless. We have a policy that people can come on the campus, and unless there's some sort of significant behavioral problem, and the behavioral problem really has to be a hostile problem. They have to have a problem with hostility. Unless they show some sort of hostility, everybody is welcome on the campus. So there's no discrimination. There's no concern about people's mental status.
But only during very limited periods of time during the day, right?
That's correct. But as I said before, I had mentioned this week to one of my managers, I believe it was Sheila, why do we have this policy? You know, we're like Enron, right? Ask why. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. I hope we're not like Enron. I said, why don't we allow people to congregate on the campus during the day, right? And she said that people would just come and they would just basically sit all day. And the feeling was at the time that these persons could be out doing something productive, maybe looking for work, maybe managing whatever life issues they have. That was the answer that I received, but that was something that was stated to her several years ago. So I'm re-looking at that to see if that's something that we want to change.
Have you surveyed the homeless population on any of these issues? Do you meet regularly with them?
I talk to clients every day.
No, I mean in terms of actual meetings where there's a process where the homeless people can come and express themselves in a group to you.
No, I haven't, but I'm going to. And what I'd like to do is what I plan on doing is we'll do it after the evening meal. And, in fact, that came up this week as well.
There used to be a monthly meeting, and there used to be a homeless rep. I called him the token homeless guy on the board of directors, and he has a token for sure. They've never had more than one homeless person I'm aware of on the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center. I mean,
we actually have a person who is a graduate of the program on the board right now, and then we have a resident of Page Smith, William Kelly, on the board as well.
Do these people in any significant way represent any kind of homeless opinion? Do they bring up issues, grievances, and concerns, or are they simply shining examples of how wonderful the Homeless Service Center Board is and being inclusive, you know?
Well, the Homeless Service Center Board is wonderful.
Of course.
They are wonderful. You have to say that about your board.
Of course, yes. Well, actually, I don't know who the board is. Are we talking Catherine Byers on the
yes.
board? No, she's not wonderful.
Don Lane?
Even worse.
Okay.
They're the nicest worst, though.
Yeah. Now, let me put it this way. They're
good people.
Yeah. Well, hey, You've got to distinguish between good people and people who are actually doing something meaningful with the resources they have over the period of time when you've been observing them. And so I like Catherine and I like Don. They're nice people. But as I recall, your latest proposal came through Don Lane, which was to cut back.
I already told you. That came through me.
but Lane was the one who favored it.
Well, let's tell the audience what it is.
This is a proposal to... go ahead, tell us what the proposal is, Doug.
You tell them.
No. I've got to give you at least 15 seconds out of every 2 minutes.
Yeah. What we were going to ask is that the parking on Coral Street be limited to two-hour parking during the day. Right now it's limited between 1 and 5 in the morning. We were asking that it be limited to 2 hours during the day because we were having a lot of people park on the street and...
frightening the auto mechanic over the...
Well, I wouldn't necessarily specify him, but there was some behaviors that they were exhibiting that were disturbing to the community.
Sort of like monkeys in the zoo, behaviors they were exhibiting. You've got to watch this now.
Hey, I'm a psychologist.
Yeah. We're going to try to get you beyond that.
Yeah. All right, so I'm trying to say it politely. So if it comes off as... what's the word I'm looking for, Coral?
If it comes off as something...
As rude.
Rude.
Abusive.
Maybe.
Mean and nasty. It's because it is, but you're not using euphemisms. I prefer the straightforward version, though, you know. I mean, we don't want these damn homeless people congregating in vehicles on this street because it might offend the businesses nearby. Isn't that what we're talking about?
I mean, yeah, I think we're actually talking about not necessarily the appearance of the people who are there. I don't think anybody really cares. Okay, some of the behaviors that have been observed by the persons who are trying to run businesses out of that.
Give me some examples.
No,
I can't pronounce that word. Lascivious.
Lascivious.
Well, I will.
I love that.
So what I'm saying is this. Okay, I'm saying some of the behaviors are disturbing to the persons who are trying to run businesses out of those bays. I can tell you what the behaviors are.
Go for it.
Urinating and defecating in public.
Open bathrooms. There are the bathrooms available they can go to.
I don't know when that occurred.
So you close your bathrooms right?
Yeah. But you know what? That's another issue that came up this week is why are we closing the hygiene bay?
I would have thought that would have come up maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or 20 years ago. But I'm glad it came up last week. I'm glad.
I've only been here 4 months.
I don't know why it didn't come up in the first week. You arrived. I don't know why it didn't come up.
Well, there were
people
few.
Have to take a piss and a shit every day, as you know.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. You know. You're probably right. Should have been my priority. I should have. You know, I agree. I'm not disagreeing with you. What I'm suggesting is that that's a good point, and we need to look at that. And you know, okay. So I walk into Homeless Services Center, right? Mm-hmm. They're mopping the floor of the hygiene bay at 4:30 in the afternoon. Why? Why are we doing this? Why are we mopping this floor now? And people are waiting outside saying, "I got to take a shit." Okay, but. The employee tells me, well, I want to keep it clean, and I want it to be clean for the next shift. I said, no, we're not here for the next shift. We're here for the clients. But there are a lot of things like that that, first of all, you have to identify them. Then you have to change them. And I'd really like to change them in a way that is not attacking or being hostile towards my employees. They need to feel part of the process, rather than being told what the process is. And so, yeah, so let's change that. So we did.
It seemed to me your primary responsibility is not to your employees, it's to the people you're getting the money to serve, and these employees are being paid to serve. You know, I mean, if you couldn't take a shit, you know, and somebody told you, well, you know, it takes about 4 months for us to get around to that, you would be, I think, outraged, and so would all your friends, and so would all your relatives, and so would everybody you know, but that's because you're accustomed as a middle-class person to having certain decencies, whereas homeless people go along with this stuff. They are, because most people get beaten down, proceed in that way, and you know, you're nodding, and you agree. But you know, you just said this example of you're coming into the shift at 4:30. The next shift is the next day you're talking about, right?
No, we're talking about, I think it's probably at 6.
So, oh, I see. So you're talking about...
So they don't want to leave it dirty. I said, well, why don't we mop at 1 in the morning?
But people aren't allowed to come in at 6. Only the people in the Paul Lee shelter.
Yeah, right? But what I'm suggesting is this. I said, why don't we mop in the middle of the night?
Well, that's a good idea. But my point is that while you're giving that example, the very example you're giving is within a context where it's so limited in terms of access that it misuses the facilities. It makes it look like a token kind of thing. See this beautiful monument we have, this homeless service center.
I agree. Okay. Yeah. And by the way, I want you to know that I had a homeless person, chronically homeless person, in my office, who said the same thing that you're saying, but in a little bit more direct terms, like where do I go to the bathroom? So. And I thought to myself, you know, he's right. Where does he go to the bathroom? And, you know, there's a lot of, I believe that most of the public bathrooms are closed, correct?
Oh,
and so
at
it's,
night.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't
there
been
are no public
enough.
Bathrooms open at night.
So my suggestion is, you know, why can't people come in and use the bathroom at night? And we haven't moved down the road.
Who makes that decision? Do you make that decision?
Myself and my managers.
Right. So you could... You know, you could ask the manager, are the managers objecting to it?
The only manager that I spoke with so far about it is Sheila.
How many managers have you got?
Well, we have directors, and there's three other than myself. So if you're listening, Sheila, we're going to have to change this policy now.
Hey, Sheila, let's get to it here.
Yeah.
Sheila,
can you call in quick?
But of course, even if you're going to open if you open the restrooms, that would mean people would have to walk across the sacred campus sometime during the evening, or even during the day, God forfend. And they might be, you know, simply you might be contributing to lazy behavior and people not going out and, you know, making something of their lives, which is of course the reason that they shut down the homeless services center of the day was the staff, frankly, didn't want to deal with it. That's what I heard from members of the staff who left. They said, we had meetings, and the staff just didn't want to keep it open. And so we closed it during the day. Now, maybe you've heard other things. It used to be open like 4 years ago or 5 years ago during the day.
I did not know that. Yeah. And that kind of philosophy is not really part of my thinking.
Well, we call it more like a sort of a self-interested, kind of like feather bedding is really what it is. That's the term for union practices where you get paid for doing less and less.
Right.
So. And I'm not saying that your staff gets paid the most wonderful wage in the world. I'm sure they probably don't.
What I'm suggesting is that kind of mentality is not my mentality. And, you know, you can't move into a situation, I've been there 4 months, and make these immediate changes. You have to examine the culture. You have to be patient. You can't make any immediate changes right away. But as time passes, changes will happen.
Interesting. You know, I heard a similar kind of... I'm not saying this is going to be the same, but I have this is a very familiar kind of sound. It's a very reasonable argument. There's no question about it. But the problem is, unless you impose your demands or your sense of fairness on the institution will, it's more powerful than you are. It will impose itself on you. And that happened to Ken Cole previously. He used to be something of an activist during the first year of his work at the Homeless Service Center. And Ken, if you're out there with your nice fancy salary as the head of the Housing Authority now, Santa Cruz County Housing Authority, you know, feel free to call in like you never have before, you know, to actually dispute some facts and talk about some issues. You know, but, he was originally, he was the vice chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force. And, you got to call, something what it is. And people get paid fairly fancy salaries that no homeless person makes at that place for sitting on top of the whole thing. And I'm not just saying you don't do anything. You obviously do a certain significant amount. But I'm sure that three homeless people would agree to do it for one-fifth the amount of money you do it. They might not do it as well, you know.
They'd probably do it better.
I have no idea. But I know that there is this differential. We get Dick Wilson at the top as the city manager, and everybody else gets you know, they get sliced off and furloughed away, and he gets to take a 10% cut in his, you know, $210,000 or whatever salary with perks that he gets, probably more than that. So, I mean, this is sort of, you know, leveler kind of talk. But to me, it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think to most people in the country, it becomes increasingly clear when there's a huge amount of differential with wealth, you have to start looking at the reality of not only fair income, but also what is, as the conservatives say, what are your taxpayer dollars going to fund? So we're in the studio with Doug LaSalle. Actually, we're in the studio with Robert Norris talking to himself, and Doug LaSalle nodding and occasionally getting a word in edgewise. Coral Brune observing. And Coral, yeah. You got to say something or else
I'm
going to
say that.
You've got to get up to the mic,
though. For a minute.
Oh, fine. Well, that's...
I was hoping you would have a break.
I see. I think we need. We may need a
break.
We should take a break from this. But perhaps you out there in the audience can provide us a little breaking room. There is a call-in number 427-3772. You can call in, and in fact, I think we will take a brief break. Let's do a little musical number, and I will get right back to you. And so will Doug LaSalle, and so will you, hopefully.
I met a stranger. Oh, she told me about people.
About people.
About people in a foreign land. She pointed her finger. She said to me, there's people, there's people hungry over there. Some people laughed. When they saw her face.
myself, cry myself, cry myself to sleep.
Back to this. So, hi, we're back again. You tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, freakradio.org on the internet. I'm Robert Norris. Name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Name of the guest, Doug Loisel, he's the new executive director of the Homeless Services Center. He's been at it for 4 months. He's been letting me do most of the talking. Let me ask you simply, if you want to respond or to any of the things I said. My major concerns are the thing like the raising the price of the homeless meal,
sure,
the people who can't really afford it. And you're saying, well, last year they raised $250,000, but that there's a limit to the fundraising that the good people on the board can do. Right?
Well, what we were talking about at the break was, What we were talking about at the break was, you know, why can't the board of directors raise an additional $48,000 along with the development director to cover the costs that we would be receiving from the clients paying a fee for meals. And my response to Robert was that our board raised $490,000 last fiscal year. And he said, well, why can't they raise $48,000 more? And I said, well, because there's a limit. You know, you get to the point where your ability, your capacity to raise funds is ending. Santa Cruz is a small community, and so you can only, for lack of a better term, you can only go to the well so many times. You know, you can only ask high-end donors so many times to give large amounts of money. And we have a huge base of small donors. We have a huge base of people who give $25, $50 a month. So we're continually getting income from the donors that are giving small donations. And then we also have, you know, the larger donors.
Well, you remember the question I asked you also during the break was, you made $240,000. How much? $480,000.
$490,000 last year.
Yeah. The question in my head was, well, where's the money spent? You gave me a variety of different things, some of which sounded necessary, some of which were vague. Like you said, 60-70% goes into salaries. I mean, you know, your salary, for instance, is how much a year?
$76,000.
And what's the next highest salary at the Homeless Services Center?
I would say probably around 65,000.
And after that?
48.
I mean, if you chop these salaries by 10% and put it into the food, homeless people could continue to eat, right? It would mean less luxuries, or not even luxuries. I mean, it would be harder living for you and other people. But on the other hand, you know, compare that to the cost of the food or the, you know, the reality of hunger there. It seems to me, I don't know. I mean, you catch my drift. You have options.
I was doing the math.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear it.
So, no, 10% wouldn't feed the homeless population that we serve for a year.
No, it wouldn't. It would feed them for 3 months, maybe.
Yeah, maybe 3 months.
If you add the 10% cuts. But you also have, I mean, $480,000, we'd have to look at the budget closely, I guess, to see where it's being spent. And I don't know. It's always seemed to me that there are basic issues. Food and shelter are the basic issues for homeless people, and maybe certain services like access to a toilets and showers and lockers. You get those done first, and then you start worrying about the other stuff. And I don't, frankly, I wish I had the financial expertise, maybe I will at some point, actually people have talked to me about it in the past, to say how much that would actually cost out of that budget. And I kind of venture it wouldn't be more than, I don't know, 20 or 30% of that budget, or 40. I don't know how much it would be, but I'm suspicious of the fact that the real needs are being slighted in some respects. If you really want to focus on the real needs, you can, and I don't think that your board does. And part of it has to do with the fact that that's not really their job. As I said before, their job is not to meet the needs of the homeless community. Their job is they regard it in a much more limited way. They're supposed to run certain services, and the services only deal with a minority of people there.
If we lived in a less complicated world, I would agree with you, right? Unfortunately, we live in a highly complicated world. And the highly complicated world works like this. there are significant costs associated with doing business. And we are a business. Our business is to provide services for homeless persons and families and children. Okay? So, you know, it would make my life significantly easier if that's all we were doing and that's all that I had to pay attention to. Unfortunately, there are a whole range of issues that I have to pay attention to that are peripheral to providing services, but essential to providing services. For example, you have employees. You are bound by employment law. You pay taxes. You pay workers' compensation. You pay insurance for the whole, might I say, campus.
A whole shebang.
So then what happens is somebody slips and falls, and then you're bound by, okay, now I've got to pay this person, or I have to go to court to litigate this matter. I was just in court on Tuesday because a client was creating a level of disturbance that we had to ask him to leave. He refused to leave. We proceeded with eviction. And there's a whole mirror.
You mean eviction or arrest for trespass?
Eviction. Okay.
So he was living in a unit.
Right.
See. Okay.
So in a perfect world, you know, if we could just provide these services, and you know, it's also a little bit more complicated on the contractual side. So for example, we receive federal money. Part of the reason why we receive that federal money is to pay for case managers. And so part of what we represented when we asked for this money is that we would provide case managers to the clients at Page Smith and also to the Reveille Family Shelter. So a certain portion of that has to be designated to a salary. And you alluded to earlier that maybe we could, you know, get rid of the case managers. Well, we could get rid of the case managers, but it wouldn't help our overall budget because we would just lose that money in federal funding.
Perhaps, although, you know, it's interesting. We originally started a food program completely with volunteers, and we ran it for months out of donated food with donated kitchens. And that's how Calamity's Cupboard ran after the city decided to stop arresting us and actually started slightly funding the program, but with much less funding than it currently exists. So,
right.
I mean, I'm just wondering if there wouldn't be, you know, private funding to take up the slack, but I don't know.
You might want to look at it from this angle that, you know, we're encumbered by all sorts of ordinances and policies and laws. For example, you just brought up the kitchen. When you were talking about, well, we provided this food, I was thinking, well, you know, why can't we do that? Well, we can't really necessarily do that because the health department comes and inspects our kitchen. And then when it comes to inspect our kitchen, they want to know that all our food handlers have food handler certificates. And so, again, the somewhat of the cumbersome nature of doing business places an obstacle in front of us to having just kind of this pure delivery of services.
Mm-hmm.
I would absolutely prefer that. I mean, if we weren't encumbered by all these, with what we're encumbered by and the business design that businesses, nonprofits, and for-profits have to follow, we could do that. But it, you know, it creates a situation for us that, you know, we're not able to do that.
Carl?
Are your services including a place for not bathing, just general hygiene?
Yeah, we have a hygiene bay.
And then how about the bathrooms and what's I didn't hear what you do about that during the day, or even at night or.
Well, go ahead.
Closed during the day.
Yeah, it's closed during the day. It's open during the morning hours, and then it closes during the middle of the day, and then it opens in the evening.
So they can't even use the bathroom during the day.
No.
Well, we talked
about
that's
that.
That's perfectly reasonable. Yeah. Why not just go take a crap in the street? I mean, heck.
Well,
does the health department check that out too?
The health department does not check our hygiene bay. That wouldn't be part of the health department's inspection. It would be more around food handling.
And if you have one going in, you got to consider what goes out.
Right.
So it's just always reciprocal.
Yeah.
No.
By the way,
it's a human thing.
Yeah, there's a phone number to call if you have questions or comments. We are talking with Doug Lossell of the Homeless Services Center, and Coral is in the studio taking care of the side view. 427-3772, 427-3772 is the call-in number. The sleeping ban is an issue I brought up originally. By the way,
let me interrupt you
for
a second. Please call in because Robert's looking a little bored with me.
I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm cranky, and I don't like the government. Well, that's what they used to say in the 90s or the early, late 80s.
How much would it cost for porta potties, by the way?
How much would it cost? Porta potties are relatively inexpensive, and generally you rent them. And I think that for a 5-month period at the Armory, we rented them, and I think they were. Actually, I can tell you if you want to wait a second. I think they were around $3,000 or $4,000. But I can give you the exact figure if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
That's
anyway, I think about $3,000.
Which is significant. I mean, this could be uh-huh. done tomorrow. You could rent porta potties, put them outside 24 hours a day. And, you might publicize in the neighborhood, that no longer will people be peeing and pooing because there'll be porta potties they can use. But then, of course, you would be accused of facilitating prostitution, drug use, and all kinds of other things. That's why the porta potties downtown were supposedly taken out, not because of any hard crime stats, but because of the kind of general rumors around these issues that, these could be used by, for unseemly activities. We
right.
actually. We have a caller here. Do you want to say something before?
No, go ahead.
We'll get the caller here. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Doug, Coral, and me. Go ahead.
Hello, Robert.
Hey there, John.
John, joking.
Yes.
I just had a quick question. Are they still not serving meals on the weekends? Is that still the case, or did they change that?
I didn't catch
Say that again, John.
Are they serving meals on the weekends or not?
Are you serving... That you've resumed the process of meals on the weekends?
Yeah. We serve meals on the weekend.
When did you begin that again?
That was occurring when I started 4 months ago.
Okay, so like I know for a while it was suspended.
And so we have food on the weekends, and now on Sundays we serve 3 meals because Dennis Adams comes in with his group and serves
right.
on the campus.
Any other questions, John, or comments?
Well, you have an interesting discussion going on. Let's continue to listen off the air.
Thank you, man.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Hey, a real caller. Great stuff. After an hour and 6 minutes, we got a caller. Thank you, John, for breaking up the monopoly, the monotony. Actually, it's not that monotonous. I mean, it's interesting. Let me jump back to, these principled issues we hammer on to no avail.
Sure.
Sleeping ban laws, laws that criminalize homeless people outside. Obviously, since there is no shelter tonight, and you have hundreds and hundreds of homeless people outside facing potentially $97 citations. That's how much it was last year, if you add on all the court costs.
Mm-hmm.
What activists have said to me, ask Doug, would you bring up in the board of directors a resolution to end the sleeping ordinance or to suspend it? As, for example, the Community Action Board voted for this. Back in 1993 when Paul Brindell, I don't know if you've met Paul, but he's an activist who worked on this issue.
For I know Paul.
You know Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been around for 20 years. He's had me arrested on one occasion, actually. So we're just good friends.
Was it merited?
No. Well, it depends on
Well, it depends on who you ask.
It depends on how you view. We were protesting his failure to open the Armory. We all sat in.
Well, what did he have to do with the Armory?
He ran essentially
The
winter shelter program, and such as it was.
Right.
And he had the option to open the Armory. That was 1989, I believe.
Yeah.
And he didn't have us arrested. He had us removed from his office. About 20 of us sat in his office. Because, there was no place for people to go. The office would have been just fine, but he didn't want us to sleep there either. So, he wasn't going to sleep there. I don't know what the problem was, but I guess that's how it goes.
Don't try to do that with me, because you'll never fit 20 people in my right. office. Not even close.
You might be surprised.
I have a little ivory tower over there, believe me.
Really?
It's about half the size of this room.
No, we'd have to snuggle in, but it's warmer. Of course, in the summer, that's not an issue.
Right.
But, Paul had us arrested also for... In the old days, there was only the River Street shelter. None of the other services were there. And then
right.
there was a large open field. And then some homeless activists started a thing called the Dewdrop Inn, mm-hmm. which was a campground. And later became the Back 40, which if you ever read History of Santa Cruz Homeless, you'll find that talked about.
Right.
The field on which now sits the Page Smith Community House at Coral Street and, well, River Street and Highway 1, with Coral Street kind of coming in on the other side.
Right.
And, you know, Brindell had I don't think I was arrested, actually, on that occasion. I was arrested, I think, in this earlier thing that I mentioned to you, where we slept overnight in the annex. We actually chained ourselves to the fixtures in order to get them to open this thing earlier. And we did. We got them to open it in 2 weeks instead of 6 months. So that was a victory for those 15 people who were able to use that facility. And, I mean, the point was to dramatize the fact that there were bureaucratic slowdowns. But
sure.
I'm straying. I guess the sleeping...
You're talking about the sleeping ban.
Yes.
Yeah.
The sleeping ban was something that Brindell brought to the Community Action Board in 93, and he had the entire, not just the sleeping ban, but the entire camping ordinance was... The board declared it was... that they opposed it, because given the shelter emergency, and there is technically a shelter emergency in Santa Cruz. There has been since 1990, at least. Mm-hmm. It was declared in 1990. It was declared again, a second one, although the first one was never suspended, but it was 94 or 95. And then there was one in 98. And in essence, there's an ongoing shelter emergency. They never go far enough to really suspend regulations that enable them to get past these kinds of concerns you mentioned about insurance and so forth.
Right.
Which they could do, but they don't.
Well, so, you know, a lot of the encumbrances are state, too. They're just not municipal codes or ordinances.
No,
that I experienced.
But the city could make a bid for that.
Well, go ahead.
It's not usually state authorities that come in and harass homeless people. It's municipal authorities that they break up camps. They break up,
I was speaking more of
regulating
the auditing that we receive. A lot of it's from the state.
The issue, though, is for us would be, and this issue has been brought to the Homeless Services Center before. I think Catherine Byers successfully torpedoed it 15 years ago when it was brought to the board. But there was the issue about the sleeping ban.
Right.
Does the Homeless Services Center board essentially want to say to the community, look, there's no shelter. Don't arrest people for sleeping if there's no shelter. Period. I mean, it's a simple statement. I mean, we have a little pledge, as you've seen, that we're giving away that says, you know, this business does not discriminate. We favor the right of the homeless to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. And so that's something you're prepared to bring to your board and to ask them to support?
I would be happy to bring it to my board. I can tell you what my board
I can tell
response
you too.
Will be. But I'd be happy to bring it to the board.
I'll give you the literature.
But my board declines to comment on political issues as a board. So that's a policy that they've implemented for many years, and so I can bring it to the board, and I'd be more than happy to do that.
I think I'd call that a political issue. I think I'd call that a human rights issue in Santa Cruz that impacts every one of their clients. So I think it's an example of the kind of shameless evasion that your board is engaged in, similar to what the city council does.
Yeah. I don't believe that my board are shameless evaders.
You haven't been around very long. I don't know all your board. I just know a few members of the board.
Right.
But I'd say they feel no shame, and I say they do evade, so I call them shameless evaders.
I'd say, you know, maybe we have a few shameless evaders in the group.
On this issue, for sure.
But I don't think as a whole they're shameless evaders.
Well, it depends on what you're talking about. I mean, I'm sure they don't evade, you know, issues that... Well, this is a core issue that they're evading.
I think the board sees their role differently than you see their...
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, they see it significantly different, their role in this. I have to say this. Shameless evaders are not the Homeless Services Center board. He's writing this down.
I'm actually writing my own phrase, shameless evaders. It's a great phrase, folks.
All right. So as a whole, I don't believe that they are shameless evaders. You may feel differently about that. But I can say that the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors is incredibly committed to the organization and the clients we serve, and they spend a significant amount of time dealing with matters that I don't have the expertise in dealing with, which would be a lot of legal issues and also fundraising issues that I would never have the time to or the connections to manage. I think it's an excellent board, and it's some of the reason why I came. In fact, I think it's the majority of the reason why I came to Santa Cruz to work for Homeless Services Center is because I was so impressed with the board. And I'm not going to get a raise this year.
What specifically about the board impressed you? I mean, that they're good at raising money, or that, you know, I mean, what?
Yeah. Well, the board raises.
What they do with the money is what concerns me. You know, that's not. Well, not they can raise it is nice.
Well, you can say that what concerns you is what they do with the money, but that's my responsibility, not the board's responsibility. The board provides me with money. I do have a finance committee that provides oversight to the budgets, but what's done with the money is they entrust me to manage the day-to-day operations, and that's my role. So if you're going to blame anybody for mismanagement of finances, blame me.
I'm not really talking about mismanagement in that sense. I'm talking about the priorities.
Priorities, yeah. In fact, I caught that a while back. Is that, you know, you have a priority of serving a certain group of people, and then you said that we serve a certain person, a type of person as well, or a group of people. Is that accurate?
You call yourself the Homeless Services Center. You don't call yourself the 5% of the Homeless Services Center, which you are,
right,
in terms of shelter.
If you look at the numbers, we serve anywhere, depending on the time of the year and the time of the month, we'll serve anywhere between 10 to 20% of the homeless persons in Santa Cruz City. So
not shelter, you want.
Not shelter.
But that's the main issue. Shelter is the main issue. I mean, I'm glad food meal is. If you ask anybody in town what the problem is, it's not food. I mean, lockers are important, storage is important, but that has to do with shelter, too. If there were campgrounds, people could go there and actually work there. I mean, if individuals like yourself were willing to say, this isn't working, we need something that really solves this problem, that doesn't pretend to do so, but doesn't, I think you might get some more responses, but I don't know.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I disagree with the fact that I need to be
an advocate.
I would advocate in. I would not necessarily consider myself a vocal advocate, but I would advocate in my own way, which is within the role of my position as executive director. So that's my advocacy. But I agree. It, you know, in no way would I disagree with the idea that if we could erect a tent and, you know, put some heaters in and provide some food, and there was a field that, you know, nobody was using, and we could open this up so people have shelter, I would have no issue with that. Why would I disagree with that?
No, but would you propose it? Would you push for it?
Yes.
Would you?
But listen.
Yeah.
So,
well, good. I'll expect to see that at the next Homeless Services Center board meeting. Go for it. You know?
Well, actually, I've already proposed it.
Oh, good.
There's a proposal with the board that they've asked me to move forward with, and that's to provide not only the 6 months of winter shelter programming, but also provide an additional six month of shelter, right, for 100 people. Because we serve in a 5 month period up to 100 people during the cold, wet weather months. We are proposing to extend that program to 6 months, and that's in we would be a vendor of the county. Okay, so the county provides for that program, but also continue to provide 100 beds for the remainder of the year. So
and
the
you're talking
off,
about
off
dumping line. The armory and keeping open, opening an additional shelter instead of looking for a warehouse is what you were talking with
right,
me about.
Right, right. So we're looking around for a place that is closer to Homeless Services Center, essentially.
Right, but again, what I've said, although I commend you for that, expanding the program is good, but this is not something that addresses the majority of people who have the problem, much less, you know, I mean, Obama is talking about health care for everybody. We're just talking about homeless shelter for the majority of people. And this in no way even attempts to do that. And I don't think it's not on your radar. I mean, when it's proposed to you, say, yeah, that's reasonable. I don't disagree with that. But you're not going to put any energy to that, partially because you know that the board is going to look at you and say, get back to work. Do your job. That's not your business. What are you doing?
What about the 20 to 30 on the waiting list? If they don't get something within a couple months, do they go away? Do you check back with them? Do they come back to you?
Most of the people that would be on the waiting list, we can try to call them if they have a cell phone. Many times they don't have a cell phone, so there's no way to contact them. So they basically have to just keep checking in.
Then once they get in there, they can stay as long as they need to?
6 months.
And then they have to renew it?
No, then they have to move on.
Every year?
Are you talking about the loft?
Yeah. The beds, I don't know. You're in charge of a lot of things.
That's the emergency. That was the emergency program. Now, is there the ISSP still operates or not?
No.
So there's no more church program.
No.
So the churches have no excuse not to put people up in their damn parking lots. We've been hearing how, that's the other thing I want to ask you about.
Well,
these wonderful Christian churches in Santa Cruz who originally actually helped to fund and were involved with services, the Homeless Service Center, are now no longer a part of it except for people like Dennis Adams who come down and occasionally do, well, weekly do a good meal, right?
Right. Is there a question in there?
Yeah, the question is, well, the question is, you answered one of the questions, which is there's no ISSP, Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, anymore. Mm-hmm. There's only the Paul E. Loft, which is closed. I mean, it's open, but it's got a waiting list, and it's there's no shelter tonight for a homeless person who walks in.
That's correct.
And so the other aspect of this problem, one of them, is that people have vehicles, and they try to shelter themselves in vehicles.
Right.
And they've contacted you, I've heard. A woman told me that she was trying to get her 65-year-old female friend into a program.
Yeah, she called me, and I called her back, but I haven't spoken with them.
Right, and it's legal under the sleeping ordinance to park, as I mentioned to you before, in a church parking lot, two vehicles to a church parking lot. And there are 300 churches in Santa Cruz County, a tiny fraction of which have ever allowed this to happen, as far as I know.
Okay.
But...
Yeah, and I, like I said when we spoke before, I'm not familiar with that.
I just wonder what you don't seem like the religious kind of fellow to me, but who knows? Maybe
I have a bachelor's degree in religion.
Oh my God! Well, now's the time for you to go. You should go out there and spread the word among these churches.
Well, have you spoken with the churches?
Yeah, although I kind of gave up about 12 years ago, but I mean, you know, I kind of realized you're not really dealing with churches, you're dealing with businesses masquerading as churches or I don't know, collections of NIMBYs who don't have much to do with fundamental Christian principles except in a very narrowly defined way, you know. We're talking with Doug LaSalle of the Homeless we're talking at Doug LaSalle of the Homeless Services Center here. Doug.
Yes.
I don't know.
I can see you're frustrated, and I know from your reputation that you've been frustrated with these things for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
And also in just our personal conversations, which I really enjoy. You know, and like I said to you before, you know, I have a role. My role is to run Homeless Services Center. The sleeping ban, I don't understand the sleeping ban, frankly. I don't understand the logic of it.
Well, the logic is that, here's Mike Rotkin's logic. He's our vice mayor. He'll soon be our mayor.
Right.
I think he would tell you that Santa Cruz allows people to sleep lightly on the land. But if we didn't have a sleeping ordinance, everyone in the world or many people would come to Santa Cruz to sleep because it's such a wonderful climate. And the facility is so great. I mean, those 50-cent meals, there's a bargain, right? You know, and besides, the shelter is, while it's not available now, in 6 months, you might be able to jump
in.
That's
a funny, you know. I don't know about Mike Rotkin. I have not met Mike Rotkin. I actually wrote him an email today and asked him to meet.
Oh, he's a very, very accessible guy. He actually comes on the air and debates with me.
Nice.
He's like his nemesis, and they can talk just as fast, and you have to...
Nobody can keep up
with Robert.
Nobody can talk as fast as Rotkin, I'll tell you. That
really?
We didn't call him Motormouth Mike for nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, no offense. He's very fast. Actually, I don't mind offending Mike, and he knows that.
Right. We were talking about.
The coin phrase, sleeping ban.
Sleeping ban. So I just said that the logic. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So you know, you have this somewhat of a myth, and the myth is that you know, if you provide services for homeless persons, that you're going to get a lot of people outside of the area accessing those homeless services. So it's kind of like build it, they will come. That's not statistically. Or supported by the research.
You don't have to tell me that. In fact, Mike Rotkin shouldn't have to be told that either, because Homeless Issues Task Force in 1999 and 2000, task force to examine the camping ordinance that Catherine Byers, as mayor, authorized to examine the camping ordinance, found the same thing. It was more that sometimes services would be used, but that the sleeping ban was not an issue. When sleeping ban was lifted in Miami, when it was lifted in Portland, Oregon, and when it was lifted in Eugene, massive numbers of people did not come to town to sleep there. There was no increase in social service use.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll take my, moving to Santa Cruz, for example. You know, I'm here for 4 months. I'm disoriented. I don't know where anything is. I still don't, right? And, if you're a homeless person, that's exponentially greater, that feeling of I don't know where things are, things aren't familiar. And so if you're in Sacramento and you move to Santa Cruz because you feel you've got to set up your whole system, you've got to figure out where the meals are, you've got to figure out where the services are, you've got to figure out where it is that's safe, where it's not safe, you've got to understand the culture of homelessness and the culture in relation to the city.
Where you can sit downtown.
Right. So, if I'm disoriented coming here and I have a place to stay and I have, all these wonderful things that I'm very grateful for, if a homeless person comes here, it just doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like people are, flocking to Santa Cruz because it's a homeless mecca. I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I mean,
and I don't think the research agrees with that. Go ahead.
No, I think I'd like to hear more about the research, but I mean, I've been told, I don't have the research on my fingertips, it's housing and jobs and family connections that have to do with why people move or stay in certain places. I mean,
well, I was looking at some statistics, and forgive me for not having them at my fingertips, but I was looking at some statistics that somewhat like 30% of homeless persons last year in Santa Cruz were employed in Santa Cruz the year before. So some absurd number like that.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't, I shouldn't put that out there because I would have to do some research to backtrack it. But there's something along those lines, So really, Homeless Services Center, who you're advocating for, what we're doing is serving persons from Santa Cruz. We're not necessarily serving people from L.A., et cetera, et cetera. So that's my opinion.
Yeah. 427-3772 is the call-in number. You don't want John to be the only caller, do you, listeners? Come on. You can get in there. Give us a call, 427-3772. You can talk to Doug. You can talk to Robert. Even Coral may shine on you. You never can tell. Check it out. I'm gonna go into a couple of other subjects, and I'd invite you to stay with us, Doug. First of all, there's an issue coming up at the next city council meeting, the medical marijuana dispensary moratorium. I don't know if you've heard about this. You probably have. It's in the Harvey West District at the two medical marijuana dispensaries. That's where the Homeless Service Center is in the Harvey West District, are already located. I spent a whole show, two whole shows, interviewing people on this issue. And I predicted what was going to happen when the Santa Cruz City Council did a 7-0, or perhaps it was a 6-0 dive in agreeing to this moratorium on all new applications for medical marijuana dispensaries. Even though there's a crying need for medical marijuana, I mean, there's only two dispensaries in the city, actually in the entire area. I think there are dispensaries outside in the county that are being harassed by the DA because he has a different notion of what is a legitimate medical marijuana dispensary. There's actually been a state decision, which DA Bob Lee got, which is the Mensch case, the Roger Mensch case, which found that, essentially every single retail establishment in the state which sells marijuana, unless they're a collective or a cooperative, is illegal. Now, of course, nobody's going after them in quite that way because that would be, I think you would produce a lot of political blowback and response to that. But in any case, what happened in Santa Cruz was the Santa Cruz City Council passed an emergency ordinance to stop these two applications from being considered by the Zoning Commission, I believe it was, or maybe it's the Planning Department.
I'm sorry.
And in Santa Cruz, it's very difficult to open a medical marijuana dispensary. You have to be 600 feet from almost everything, and you have to find a landlord who's willing to rent to you. For 5 years, there were no medical marijuana dispensaries open from 2000 to 2005 because of this. And finally, one of them, Greenway, was given a variance. And then a second one opened a couple years later. So then a couple more are trying to open up. The response by the Planning Department has been to try to shut them down. They claimed only for 45 days. Now they want to shut them down for 10 months. And I'm going to be talking more about this issue on Sunday because I actually have an expert. Doug here is, I don't want to really brag, but he's well known for his his expertise in marijuana smoking. He's a long-term junkie, and we don't want to get into that.
Robert's sparking up a joint right now.
Yeah, we try to, you know. No, actually, I'm hoping to have some people in the studio to talk about it. And it is coming up at the next city council meeting next Tuesday. We'll be talking about it then. What I'm going to do now is play something from last Saturday that I thought I'd lost, but I actually have found this tape. This is a tape of the 7th weekly protest in front of the Bunnies shoe store. It's actually not the shoe store. It's the Bunnies across the street from the shoe store. Bunnies has sort of expanded. It's hopping all over the place. They have a shoe store on one side of the street next to the Hotel Palomar.
Well, they're reproducing.
Like rabbits,
yeah.
And then
it's
across
amazing.
The street they have another store. And there are many stores. So we set up a table, and you're going to hear some interviews from that. And Doug, I encourage you to interrupt with caustic comments, amusing observations, and you know, grunts, snarls, and groans.
I'm getting tired.
Or possibly snores, as the case may be.
2 hours is a long time.
It's too long, yeah. It's, well, you should be here in the morning. I do 3.5 hours on Sunday mornings. Anyway, here's a little of the of that, folks.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I go on and on. And remember, you can go on and on if you want, 427-3772. You know, that I'm not the only person with a voice in this community.
Yeah, where's my half measures group? They were going to call in. So,
yeah.
I don't know where they're at.
Boy, come on, you gals, you guys.
Where's my people? Where's my peeps?
It looks like we're going to have to maybe we'll bring...
My posse is disappointing me.
Yeah, well, you know, you'd be surprised how many times I've been disappointed. Anyway, let's hear a little of this. Maybe, Doug, this will maybe wake you up or cheer you up or get you out of here. I don't know. Let's see how it goes.
All right. Boy, that was strong.
So it's about 15 to 2 in front of 1349 Pacific Avenue. I'm here in front of Bunny's, and right next door is what used to be the Downtown Association headquarters offices, but now 1347 Pacific looks like Open Field Software and a number of other stores on the second floor. Across the street at our usual place, the hat company is getting a respite thanks to the generosity of one of our activists, Bernard Klitzner, who wants to give Maria, the hat company's owner, a week. I'll make that 13 days to review all the literature and make a decision as to whether to post the pledge in the window of her store. The pledge states, of course, the store does not discriminate against the homeless. Actually, this business does not discriminate. We support human rights for the homeless community, including the right to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. And it's been a slow day. I'm alone at the table, and the weather is warm. Quickly, we have actually a signer, a second signer. You're signing a second time because we may have lost your volunteer petition
before.
What's your name?
My name's Patrick.
And you are?
Tracy.
And what, you're from Felton, and you attend school in Cabrillo, and you are from?
I'm from Felton, and I go to school at San Jose City.
But yet you're down here hanging out. And you could be going to the Harry Potter movie, which is actually what you're headed for.
We're on our way.
Yeah, yeah. And so what? Why get involved with this plan to boycott Bunnies downtown?
We think that Santa Cruz should be returned back to its peaceful state, and there shouldn't be any legislature or ordinances against people
sitting near a building. That's pretty criminal behavior. In fact,
our
table actually is only legal halfway out from this square. We have that much legal space.
That's the thing. It's ridiculous. And busting people for pulling cans out of the recycling bins on top of the garbage can, it's just absurd.
Have you seen some problems downtown yourself that concern you?
Yeah. You know, actually, we watched a show on the local Santa Cruz television network. Not Too Early, Not Too Late show with, I believe, Terry Martin was his name, and he did a little investigative report on it. And it was something. It was enlightening, to say the least.
What did he reveal?
I can't remember. You tell.
Well, from what I remember, he was videotaping a gentleman who was pulling cans out of the garbage can, and the cops actually stopped and cited him for it. And he ended up investigating it more and found that there's a separate entity that apparently is contracted through the county, I'm assuming, who actually comes and collects the recycling bottles and cans.
And once you put those bottles and cans on the sidewalk, unless you have a sign that says, "This is for anybody who wants them, get your mitts off," city employees.
Yeah. Exactly. And the ban on sleeping is just another step in the wrong direction. It's just sad. It's just inhuman.
Yeah. Liberal weenies here, eh?
Yeah, it doesn't represent Santa Cruz very well.
I'm a liberal weenie. Yeah.
There's so few liberal weenies left.
I know.
Or someone called you a liberal dick. But
whatever.
It depends on your mood, I suppose.
I wear that badge with pride.
Indeed. Again,
you have a little fire under your butt to do something.
Say the least.
Yeah.
Again,
so we appreciate you being out here because this is the second time we've seen you, and it's you. I mean, you're here. You're taking care of it.
Same old faces. What can you say?
Faces.
Well, I'm glad that you're glad, and
we're happy to see you outside of these stores.
Yes, boycott bunnies downtown.
It gives it the right feel here. Yeah.
Well, thank
Make
you.
Make it a place that you want to be. If you guys weren't here, I wouldn't want to be down here.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Take that, city attorney. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We have some volunteers. Well, volunteers. Are you volunteers or are you just pledgers?
We're pledgers.
And where are you from?
Scotts Valley. Fresno. Scotts Valley.
So you're visiting Scotts Valley.
And before we hear more from these Scotts Valley folks, we have Doug who's got a question. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, I was just wondering, as I was thinking about this last week, why bunnies? There must be other...
Yeah, this actually is a question which many people ask.
That.
Yeah, it's because Bunnies is one of the four stores that signed declarations that the police and the city attorney is using to criminalize Ana Richardson and Miguel de Leon, two homeless musicians.
I know them, yeah.
Who are... not only banned from sleeping citywide, but if they sleep downtown, they get arrested.
Right.
So we wanted to point out that we're doing two things. We're focusing on these stores and saying, you know, why did you lend yourself to this? And isn't this absurd what you're doing? And then secondly, we're asking all stores to put in their window the pledge that I just handed you about, you know, this business doesn't discriminate, right to sleep somewhere, not anywhere and everywhere.
Right.
And so... Actually, I've encouraged Huff to take the protest to Lulu Carpenter's, which is another one of those stores, which is not only... It tried to arrest one woman for taking napkins from the store, but it also... Monthri Srinath has recently, and you'll hear this on the tape, according to the testimony of his own workers, instructed them not to serve homeless people or homeless-looking people.
And he arrested... Oh, that man with the bunny.
Yeah.
He's not related to bunnies.
Yeah, Shane Maxfield. Yeah. Max, Shane, last name, I'm not sure what his name is, but he was sitting with a bunny on the sidewalk soliciting money quietly with a sign and offered to trade computer work. He's a computer expert, lives in his vehicle. And Srinath came out and berated him, made a false police report. And in the past, he's done other things, like throw coffee at homeless activists and... And on the other hand, he's also helped, used to give away food to the homeless out the back of his store. I mean, let's not just call, he's not all black or white.
Right.
You know, and he's done other positive things. But in the main, he has a pretty, if a store is actively discriminating against homeless people, as Jack's, for example.
But don't you think that all, you know, when we talk about these issues, aren't all these issues somewhat gray?
Well, it depends.
I mean, people are good and bad.
Well, it depends. Let's put it this way.
Bunny
colored bathrooms and white bathrooms are somewhat gray, but they're not really somewhat gray. They indicate segregation.
Okay.
Stores that say, we're not going to serve you because of your homeless appearance
on a regular basis. And sometimes they lie about what Robert's done or other people about the bathrooms, right? Spreading stuff in the bathrooms. Remember that?
Spreading feces?
We did a protest in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and we were accused of vandalizing the bathrooms. I have not been in the Bookshop Santa Cruz for 15 years. I was banned from the bookshop by the Coonerty family because we did protests against their political positions on the city council.
Right.
But that's the reason Word Bunnies, it's in a way it's a little arbitrary, but they are one of the four stores. The way, you know, we're encouraging the public not to shop at stores that, A, don't have this pledge in their window, and to shop at stores that do. And also, B, to pay particular attention to stores that signed these declarations, that the city attorney is using to do this very draconian injunction against.
Robert, what's the third and fourth store?
Do you feel guilty about affecting people's livelihoods?
No.
No? Okay.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
first of all, I don't really think that we're, I wish we were affecting, although actually the hat company has suggested we are affecting their livelihood, even though we're not targeting them, because they have the same entrance that Bunny's did.
Okay.
So in response to that, we moved across the street to give them an opportunity to, you know, we said, look, we're going to come back because it's not that we're after you, but you have the same entrance that Bunny's does. We can't help that. So if you want to distinguish yourself, put up a, you know, we don't discriminate sign. We're fine. And that'll give us a real motivation to go somewhere else. Otherwise, Bunny's is we're going to, and you happen to be here, you want special treatment, well, show you deserve special treatment is the thought. And it's not, it is true. I'm a local shopper. I don't buy in the Borders bookstore in Santa Cruz. I can't buy in Bookshop Santa Cruz because I'm not allowed in there.
If you need any books, let me know and I'll buy them for you.
Right, right. Well, we've actually boycotted the Bookshop Santa Cruz too for a number of years. So was that your question? Let me move on with some more of the tape. If unless you got
sure,
more questions,
fine.
I just wonder what the other.
Actually, I do have another question. You should
go
make
ahead.
The sign bigger.
There is a bigger one.
Okay,
I'll give you the bigger copy.
Oh no, I'm good.
I expect to see that up.
Yeah,
and,
I'll bet you do.
And, on a nice billboard in front of the homeless service center. Okay.
Why aren't you guys visiting? No?
No, we go to Bethany University.
Okay, and you're going to spread the word at Bethany that all good Christians should support anti-discrimination.
We actually have a table set up during the school year about the problem.
Put that down and put your number down. Say, at Bethany, we do it during the year. We'll get in touch with you, share some literature with you if you want.
Yeah. Do you know Chad Ridout?
I do not, you know, but maybe I should meet her.
He set up a table about this last year during the school year.
Great. So. I just mentioned Bethany on there so I don't forget who you are. All our listeners can hear the striking truth. Any comments about discrimination in the area you've seen? What's your name?
Bree. I've only heard what the city is doing now. You can't even lean against a telephone pole without, you know, with a cop. A cop will come over and tell you to.
Well, if you look middle class and you have money in your pocket, you have nothing to worry about. You have Bethany University. What's your problem?
What's my problem?
Well, why aren't you? I mean, don't you accept the fact they're defending our safe and sanitary streets?
Where are the homeless going to go? I mean, if there are fewer shelters than there are homeless people, then we're basically just kicking
them out. Expecting Santa Cruz to do everything? Why don't they go to Fresno, for example?
Fresno, actually, we do have a huge homeless population there. It's almost top in the nation for homeless community. We do have some shelters, but, like, it's getting worse, and, yeah, we are finding more and more homeless people, and kind of like she said earlier, if there's nowhere for them to go, then how can you rightfully or morally ask them to leave if there's nowhere for them to go?
Sounds sensible to me, but then again, I agreed with you before you even began to speak. So what can I say? What's your name?
Amanda.
And again, you are?
Blair.
And?
Bree.
Any final words or thoughts you want to put out to the free radio community?
Yeah, I actually heard one of my friends said that he went to the city council meeting where they're discussing this, and someone there who is against what the county is doing, not what the city is doing, said that there's really no hope in just the people trying to stand up for the homeless. That it's just been, the city has been completely against it for a long time, and there's just so much power that they can't change it.
Looks like a man with a camping ticket standing to your left here. But, unfortunately, you're right. They passed anti-homeless laws in February. They got this injunction in May, and they're paying more to have these bumblebee hosts in yellow and black going around telling people, you can't sit here, you can't sit there, and we're going to keep an eye on you, we're going to call the police, and so forth.
It's sad. It's really sad.
Thank you. Here's a man with a strange yellow slip of paper. What is this yellow slip of paper, sir?
Well, it's got my name and address on it. I just travel through here, and I can't afford to rent a motel, but it says that I was illegally camping. Now, according to me, camping is when you set up an establishment to stay there for a day or two or three. All I did was lie outside so that I could sleep and fulfill one of my human needs. Okay? No one has ever committed a crime in their sleep. Okay, so I think it's ludicrous to...
except perhaps George Bush and Obama, both.
He dreams evil.
They seem to be, bombing the Pakistanis even in their sleep.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So, but, yeah, you're right. Generally speaking, ordinary people don't have the means to get their minions to go out and commit crimes while they're sleeping.
And so while I may have been in the wrong place, I don't know. I don't think any place is actually wrong.
This is a ticket. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Why don't you describe the encounter? What happened right before you got this ticket? Was it a ranger, a police officer?
I actually didn't know. It was a man with a flashlight and a dog, and a very feisty dog, and it seemed like he didn't have full control over the dog. He had partial control over the dog, and it was... I'm not afraid of the dog, so I remained calm, but if I had been more of a skitterish person, the dog would have reflected on that and possibly bitten me. Okay, would have been a very great possibility.
It looks like this is a ranger. You got it from a park ranger. Was a person in green, or...
It's dark. I got the flashlight in my face, and I don't know.
It says it happened at 12:08 a.m. Did the person say they got it this morning?
Yeah.
So today is July 18th. So did the person say they got a complaint about you?
No complaint.
Was there a no parking or no camping sign there?
I didn't see any no camping sign.
What exactly did the officer say to you?
He just said there's no camping, and he started writing me a ticket. And you just assume things, when an officer comes with a dog and a light and starts writing you a ticket.
It is Officer Chavez, badge 722, and the camping ordinance is, it looks like a state code, and you were parked up on the lighthouse. Is Lighthouse Field in Santa Cruz? Or?
Yeah, it's across from the lighthouse.
Were other people sleeping there as well?
Not that I saw.
No. And he didn't warn you. Is this your first time in Santa Cruz getting such a ticket, or is this...
Yeah, getting a ticket. Yeah, I've been in Santa Cruz 5-10 times.
And again, your name is?
Michael Moya.
Okay, Michael, anything else you want to add?
I just want to repeat that no one has ever committed a crime in their sleep, and although some people might sleep in, kind of a wrong place, usually they're sleeping in a bad place, like on the street, because they're in a desperate situation, not because that's where they want. And, of course, there's a lot of places that could be allowed, people could be allowed to sleep, and I wasn't camping, I was just sleeping. I could get up in the morning and leave, and, of course... That's it.
Thank you, Mike.
Just want to make my statement.
And here we have a man who may or may not have a statement. What's your name, sir?
My name is Fred Rosen.
And Fred, you're a Rosen. That sounds like a familiar name. You have a relative who has been treasonably associated with this group in the past, so we may have to inform Homeland Security.
I just think that what you're doing is the right thing to do. Santa Cruz should be a leader for the country as to how to deal with the homeless and how to deal with the people who are in need, the people who are ill. And what they're doing now is they're becoming a follower. They're doing what many other cities are doing, and this is the wrong thing to be doing.
Well, Mayor Matthews tells us that we have to be concerned about safety, 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 and Santa Cruz does a great job taking care of its homeless population.
They do a great job taking care of their homeless population, and we do all have to be concerned about safety. We all have to live together, and there has to be balance. Everybody's rights have to be respected, and we have to basically not differentiate based upon people's economic status. I mean, citizens who are poor are entitled to just as much as citizens who are rich.
But the homeless are ruining the businesses like Bunny's downtown. Don't we want to get rid of them? People send them to some other places where they can be better cared for.
Well, this is a personal thing, and that the last thing I feel we really need as a country, and this is kind of a political statement, is more perfect shopping areas. We probably need a little bit more attention to some of the social issues that need to be addressed, and I'm sure that many of the shopping areas that have been in Santa Cruz for many, many years have prospered with Santa Cruz the way it was.
Well, I'm not going to tell the Downtown Association your address, so they might send you a nasty note. Again, we've been talking with...
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Here we have a report from Bunny's. What's your name?
BJ.
And BJ, what did you find in Bunny's? She's backing off from the video camera.
Come on, you look beautiful.
All right, no camera. But go ahead. We have your.
I guess I'm just not interested in candles with pieces of apple inside of them and things like
that. You got something against apple candles? Look, there's many fabrics in Bunny's.
Apple candles? No, it's fine. I don't even know what the policies are that you're protesting exactly. Yeah, why you chose Bunny's to protest against?
It's kind of explained on the bulletin board there. It has to do with the fact that they've colluded with the city attorney in signing declarations against two homeless musicians.
Oh.
Instead of looking for a legal place for them to sleep somewhere outside the city, along with the 1,500 other homeless people who have no legal place to sleep, because there's no walk-in shelter right now. All the programs are full and have waiting lists, from what I'm told by Doug Loisel, the homeless services director. And so what they did instead was they got an injunction against homeless people, these particular homeless people, sleeping anywhere downtown, and in addition, if they do, they go to jail immediately. Not just a ticket, but a jail sentence. So that's why we're picking on Bunny's.
Okay. Well, it's pretty severe to have, you know, to have that much discrimination against people who have no recourse of their own.
It's nothing against apple candles.
It's not criminalization on top.
Totally their choice, and to not even have three chances, you know, is kind of just pushing the limits, I think, way too far.
It's using city money as well for this kind of stuff. So, thank you, BJ. Santa Cruz, the city that makes sleeping a crime for poor people outside. Bunny's, the store that supports anti-homeless laws. Say no to stores that criminalize poor people, or walk on by, as the case may be. An out-of-towner who's printing. This is an agreement to look in the window for the pledge. If you see a pledge, it means you like the store. If you don't see a pledge, it means you're wondering why there isn't one there. Santa Cruz is, like other cities, criminalizing poor people at night. We're trying to stop that. That's what this is about.
On the East Coast, we criminalize poor people during the day, night, and
In between. Well, you're way ahead of us.
Unfortunately, it needs to stop. It needs to stop. People are people. We're all equal. I mean,
some are more equal than others.
That's not true, due to the fact that if a man sleeps on the ground, when he gets up, he'll move one leg first, and then the rest of his body will follow. If a man sleeps in the bed, which is erected off the ground, he moves one leg first, and the rest of his body will follow. A man's blood, or woman, is green on the inside. Once they bleed, the oxygen hits it.
Is it really green? Is that true?
It is green.
This isn't some kind of a plot.
The vein. Ask a doctor.
Wow. I never realized that. But how can you tell it's green? Because I guess you can get inside there.
The doctors.
Where are you from?
I'm from Boston.
And what is your name, sir?
My name is Daryl Tatum.
Daryl, are you here in town for a while? Or?
Yes. I've been here 3 weeks. I'll be here one more week.
Well, keep an eye out for this pledge. When you see it, go in there, pat them on the back. When you don't, say, hey, what's going on here?
I will. I'll do that. Now, don't release this to the FBI or the CIA. Do this.
Only the National Security Agency will get copies of this.
That's the joke.
Yes, of course. And Al-Qaeda, of course. We're the local Al-Qaeda group, as you know.
Give them that.
Yeah.
Let them know that. They should sign this.
Yeah, and with the Pakistani resistance, you know.
They're probably sleeping on the ground somewhere,
too. I would
too.
Suspect so,
yeah. I hope so.
And getting their shit bombed out of them all the time.
No, but
along with the civilian people around them.
I'm all for this. It's a shame. We have a lot of the same situation back in Boston, and what they do is they have vans that come by, pick them up, and take them to a shelter. Now, if there's no room in the shelter, they release them back on the street, you know, and let them fend for themselves. Now, on a cold winter night, what they do is the homeless will go and sleep on the grates for the subway that the heat comes up. And they're usually covered by something, so they're not spotted. But the officials know where they are. They try to get them into a warm shelter at night. And it's not enough room. So they end up on the street without, you know, having a choice sometimes.
Your name is?
Joni Cohen.
And are you local or out of town?
Out of town.
And where are you from?
Palo Alto.
Oh, ho. Now you say all these questions. Your first time in Santa Cruz?
No.
You like it here? Do you like being surrounded by video cameras and tape recorders?
I like Santa Cruz. I don't like the video cameras.
I hear you. Have you ever seen homeless people much in Palo Alto?
Not as many as there are here, I guess.
And you're a young, attractive woman. Have you been bothered by homeless people?
No.
How about in Palo Alto?
Yeah.
And how did that happen?
Wait, sorry. Oh, even in Palo Alto?
Yeah.
I said they don't bother anyone.
Okay, how old are you?
15.
Okay, well, we expect you to come back when you're 18 and give me a hug.
All right. Please, thank you.
Thank you. Again, your name is?
Veroni Cohen.
Thank you, Veroni Cohen. What's your name?
She's
a shy person. And what's your name?
Oh, I'm Kelsey.
And Kelsey, you're signing the pledge.
So we only have about 6 minutes left. This actually tape becomes interesting as the police come in and attempt to cite us, or shall we say threaten to cite us if we don't move the table in an hour. But I have with me Dr. Doug Loisel. It's not Lassell, as I've been telling you, la, 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 la. It's Loisel, and it's Dr. Loisel, although I'm not quite sure what medical specialty you're actually good at.
None.
There you are.
Psychology.
He's a quack.
Clinical psychology.
All right. Well, you can get clinical with us.
Yeah.
But we only have about 5 minutes left. You had some thoughts about the absence of drug programs in Santa Cruz?
Yeah. One of the things that surprised me when I came to Santa Cruz was that I think you only have one public licensed and certified drug and alcohol program. Is that correct? It's Janus, right? And I think New Life Church also. New Life Center provides some drug and alcohol programming as well. Mm-hmm. You have some SLEs, sober living environments, but as far as having large drug and alcohol programs, there's really not too many here. And it appears to me that there are some significant issues with drug abuse and addiction in the community. It may be because of the population that comes into HSC. Many of our clients, struggle with addiction issues. But nonetheless, I'm just surprised because I keep hearing Janus. I don't hear any other programming. And Coral mentioned that there's not more beds. And just one program that the Salvation Army ran had 152 licensed beds. Another program had 300 licensed beds. Another one, a veterans program, had 150 beds. That was just in the Salvation Army. And although LA is much bigger, there were a huge number of drug and alcohol programs there.
Well, we don't need no stinking drug programs. We are drug and alcohol free, as well as human rights free as well, in some respects. Well,
there is one in Watsonville, though.
Is there one in Watsonville?
It's through jail after you get out of jail.
So it's like a Prop 36 program?
I think so, yeah.
Right, yeah. So I was just surprised about that. And, it's unfortunate that there's not more opportunities for people to get clean and sober if they choose to.
Or to get stoned if they want to, for that matter.
Yeah, for that matter.
Some injection centers where people can actually use clean needles and be in safe environments, as in, for example, Europe. We don't have that in Santa Cruz. We don't have any cities in the country proposing that. Though I guess it is being considered in Canada now. It's being done in some Canadian cities. That's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We have about 4 minutes left before Uncle Dennis comes barging into the studio with his foolish 60s music. I mean, who wants to hear that kind of stuff? Hey, man. Actually, I kind of like 60s music, but that's because I'm an old guy. I'll be back on, I guess it'll be Sunday. I'll have some flashbacks in the morning. And I will be playing the rest of this tape, which is probably another half an hour to 45 minutes. It involves a lot of police action, which, for those of you who are obsessed like I am with guys with guns.
Cops.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty exciting.
Robert's going to get home and catch the latest episode.
Bad boy.
What are you
going to do?
Hey, man.
There'll also be a
protest, so we're probably gonna have more police action coming at. And you can actually join in the police action. You're going to have to take pictures, bring your cell phones, if you have photo cell phones, or just bring your cell phones to, catch some of the excitement. That's going to be in front of Bunny Shoes on Saturday at 2 o'clock, not at 1 o'clock as we've been doing in the past few weeks, but we're going to kind of, for all you late risers, it's going to be 2 o'clock. Doug Loisel, or should I say Dr. Doug?
Just call me Doug.
I'll just call you Doug. You actually called up and apologized for not being at the protest. Now, are you going to make the protest on Sunday, or Saturday, I should say, or what?
I would be at the protest with bells on, except that I'm going to be in L.A. this weekend.
What a sneaky answer. All right, I want you to check with L.A. Can, the the Los Angeles Community Action Network, which concerns itself with monitoring police misconduct in the inner city.
Sure you will.
Get back to us with a report.
I will.
All right. We'll see about that. We're going to be having Doug will be a regular feature of my show for the next 20 weeks. He, of course, will be only on allowed a five-minute segment, but we won't be cutting him off the way Mike Rotkin did me in 2005. And for details on that, well, you'll have to call my off-air number, 423-HUFF, 423. Who is it out there? There's somebody's knocking at the studio door. You can never confirm. We're not sure who that is.
Pirate.
I think I actually know who it is. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spirit. Can you put that differently, Doug?
Thanks for having me, Robert. It was a pleasure.
Doug, it's been fun. And how can people get in touch with you? Do you want to give a number or an email in case people want to reach you? What is it? Go ahead.
CIA coming for Robert.
Go ahead. You know, probably the best, probably my personal email, which is Dr. D. Loisel, D-R-D, Loisel, L-O-I-S-E-L, at AOL.
Okay.
Yeah, drop me an email.
All right, okay. And thank you, Doug, for being the first
and
perhaps the last Homeless Services Center director to come in and face the music, or in this case, face the Robert. Thank
Amen.
You.
Amen.
All right. Thanks All right. again, man.
He needs a bodyguard.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Coming up next, unfortunately, is Uncle Dennis and his questionable beerish
She's
activities.
On or off, just
what ails you? Well, Dennis will ail you along with the rest of his stuff. He also has some interesting reports around 9 o'clock, so you can tune out the music and tune in to the kind of hard work he's doing supporting anarchistic dogs who are destroying our country with their questionable environmental animal rights activity. I don't know. Dennis, you going to be talking about that?
We're going to be talking about some Sea Shepherd people who were arrested and apparently jailed in Namibia for protecting seals.
That's pretty obscure, I must say. What about local people who are getting arrested for violating the ETA Act, or whatever the hell it's called? The Animal Enterprise Terrorism?
There's no new news on that one.
Nothing new.
I saw this week.
Okay, well then, thank you, and tune in for Dennis's show, and check out the protest on Saturday at 2 o'clock, and give me a call at 423-4833. Thanks for being with me.
There is without a warning. You broke my heart. Take it, baby, tore it apart. And you left me standing in the dark crying. Said your love for me was dying. So come on, baby, baby, please. I'm begging you, baby, that I'm on my knees. Turn on your lights, let it shine on. Shine, let it shine.